Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 296, featuring two awesome people from Crafty Apes. And that's Matt Akee, executive VFX producer at the Crafty Apes, and Aldo Ruggiero, VFX supervisor, to talk about the really cool horror slash comedy slash slasher, The Babysitter, colon, Killer Queen, which is the sequel to The Babysitter, available on Netflix and directed by McG, which is pretty fun. Kristen, this is good timing, right? Halloween time.
Yep. You can watch us now all month long. Yep. It's amazing. It was a really good movie, and I'm a huge Halloween fan, so it was right up my alley.
I mean, I think some people may not be, but they're not normal people. Halloween is so much fun. Halloween is so much fun. And this one is not shy of humor and definitely not shy of gore, which is also really fun if you like that kind of stuff. And so it was really kind of fun to have that movie. And actually, it was cool because they're like, hey, we want to talk about this movie we're going to do. And it's like, great, I get to watch a really fun movie for the podcast. So it was a lot of fun to do that. Mm-hmm. Really liked having them on, right? What else did you think of them?
Well, it was cool. They talked about like just the effects of the movie, and also you get to hear where Crafty Apes fits into the overall scheme of like effects houses in the industry. So yeah, it was really, I liked listening to all that stuff. So it was good.
Yeah. They're very versatile. They have a lot of offices. They definitely take advantages of tax credits around the world. So they definitely have a lot of offices in all those tax credit places so that they can basically offer their great services and their great talent at different locations. So it's pretty interesting to hear how they operate and you know, sort of what they do. And also sort of working in the Netflix world now, you know, like that's the world that we're living in, where people are creating content for that because that's the only place that movies are coming out these days. But it's, you know, they're totally attuned to it and they definitely create high quality effects. Another real cool thing that I really liked hearing about Aldo, and I think that we are going to try to talk to him about a little bit more, is, you know, the work that they did using V-Ray for Nuke and Houdini as well. So just sort of understanding how people are starting to use those products is also a really cool thing to have. Really cool to talk to him about that stuff. Okay, cool stuff. And I really thank, you know, Matt and Aldo for being on. What are some of our announcements that we have?
All right. So you can find these out at chaosgroup.com/events. The first one is, this comes out, starts October 13th and goes to the 15th, and it's a virtual 3D expo. And they'll talk about how you can learn more about using V-Ray to hit your deadlines. So that's awesome. And then we have the Illumination Challenge, which we've talked about the last few weeks. And this is a student rendering challenge, and the deadline is November 30th. And our tagline is, we love experimenting with light, and you can enter our student rendering challenge and a chance to win the V-Ray or Corona licenses and or Chaos Cloud credits. So
that's right. Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Really cool to have those competitions out there. There's going to be a couple more coming up soon, so keep your eye on that. I did announce last week that we're going to be at GTC that event did happen, which is really cool. We were able to announce a bunch of things. We did announce something that's pretty awesome there. We announced a lot of things about our GPU technology. We've been doing a huge amount of work there. But one thing that probably is going to have people very excited, I know it has me excited, I'm just going to talk about it myself, but it was the fact that we announced live linking with Lavina. That means that if you're in Max and you have your scene in Max, you can live link in Lavina, and whatever you have open in Max will be rendering in Lavina live as you're moving and doing things in Max. So really exciting to sort of see that connection between Max and Lavina at this point. And if you're asking, well, what is it going to happen with other products? Well, it's happening. Don't worry. So it's really cool to see that. Lavina is having a lot of cool stuff. We have some other product announcements as well. Kristen, what else is going on?
All right. So we have V-Ray 5 for Houdini Beta is out now, along with V-Ray 5 for C4D. And
That's in beta as well.
Yes.
We're getting some great feedback on both of those things. Yeah.
And then we have Phoenix FD4, and update 3 is now available.
Yep.
And then the last is V-Ray 5 for SketchUp beta is available.
That's pretty new. People are very excited about V-Ray 5 for SketchUp and the beta. I definitely recommend you guys check it out. It has a very unique feature that is the first time we're offering it in any of our V-Ray packages, which is something we're calling Vision. And it allows basically, it's a rasterized rendering of your V-Ray scene in beta. And because any of you who has viewed SketchUp before, you know that the rasterized render is doesn't necessarily reveal all the things you'd like it to reveal, but Vision is pretty amazing. So go check it out. If you are a V-Ray 5 for SketchUp user, please check it out and check out what Vision can offer you, as well as obviously all the other great V-Ray 5 features, such as the new frame buffer and the light mixer and all those other great, wonderful things. Really looking forward to your feedback on that. Remember, all these betas rely on you, the users, to tell us what is working, what's not working, and what you'd like to have as an offer. It is your product to make it the way you think it needs to be. All right. So now, in terms of the podcast, where can people follow us?
So you can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
That's correct. And if you have any ideas and emails, and yes, there was a couple of emails that fell through the cracks, and my apologies for that. but please, labs@chaosgroup.com is their email. If you have any ideas for guests or whatever, please let us know. I will be more diligent about searching things that may have fallen into the wrong folders. But yes, labs@chaosgroup.com is a great place to email us about our ideas or anything you would like to have out there. Obviously, if you guys should know that these podcasts are in video form, as we mentioned before, you can see them on YouTube or on our Facebook page. And that's also available. And we'd love to hear what you think about that or have any ideas. You can see that I am in my lovely living room today. And then also, I think that's about it. I think, yes. Oh, yeah. And if you ever want to review us, obviously, Apple Podcasts would be a good place for that. Just leave us a note, share us with your friends, and let us know what you think. That being said, please enjoy this awesome podcast with Matt and Aldo from Crafty Apes.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Well, thank you guys so much for doing this. This has been a lot of fun. I actually just finished watching The Babysitter. Really good. Really funny. I hadn't laughed like that in a while. really nice, gory, perfect for Halloween. Great, great film. A lot of fun. A lot of fun. That must have been so much fun to work on, right?
It was amazing. I mean, the freedom that we had on this movie. We were involved from the beginning. Matt and I broke down the script. I think, what was that, September, Matt?
Probably like September of last year, yep.
Mm-hmm. September of last year, we broke the script. You're familiar on the process, right? You break the script, mm-hmm. then you propose a budget, and then they shoot something completely different. And then you do it all over again, and you keep on going, and then you end up with something that you didn't expect a year earlier. So we are basically a year from the moment that we beat the show, and it morphed and it became many different things. For shows like this, we usually, are smaller vendors, or we are medium-sized vendor. Right. We end up doing just little chunks of this. We had a chance on this movie to actually do the entire thing. Like 95% of it. That's just a big piece of it. And so they asked us on set for the duration every day. And that doesn't happen for everything, because not everybody has the budget to do that.
Okay.
But they knew that being a lower budget movie, they want to have the people that are going to do the visual effects there every day, so they know what the idea behind is and how things are changing. Change was the word on the movie, because we tried a lot of things as we were there. But and if something wasn't working, like that, things were changed, and all of a sudden, we were doing something different.
Right.
And the spirit during the shoot was of joy, of happiness. Meg G really made it a point to make sure that it was fun for everybody.
Yeah. Well, and when did you guys film? When was the filming happening?
It was October, November of last year.
All right.
So we wrapped right before the new year. We wrapped up, and it was, Aldo can attest to it, it was a pretty arduous, shoot in terms of a lot of huge set pieces and very exciting and aggressive in-camera gags and mm-hmm. locations, basically captured in a very short amount of time over the production schedule. It wasn't a long physical production schedule.
Yeah, how many weeks was it?
We were, about 6 weeks.
6 weeks, all in all.
So what's great about McG, about, and working with someone of his expertise, similar to when I worked with Robert Zemeckis years ago, is that his shooting ratio is low because he knows exactly what he's going to do. He has everything in his head, it's all boarded. And there's obviously room for catches, catch can, and moments that pop up.
Right.
But what's great about working on a movie like this as a creative partner and a collaborator, as opposed to just a vendor, is he comes to the table knowing that he's got design and sort of an overall scope of where he wants to go, and he knows how he's going to execute it, but he really is focused on the camera and the actors, and then trusting his keys from production design to visual effects supervision, like Aldo being there, mm-hmm. to basically be in the background, creating concepts, kind of watching what he's doing, and then coming up with the plan as we go. So by the time we get into post-production, we already have sort of a roadmap generally, and then it just becomes this creative sandbox of iterations and different, tries and kind of adding layer on layer to make it cooler and cooler. So there's really a trust factor, and because he moves so fast and the shooting ratio is low, it gives us a lot of time to have, in the background, just creative, freedom and space to explore during it.
Things evolved tremendously during the shoot.
Okay.
And at a certain point we were shooting with a couple of crews, and I believe Matt happened to be in LA as well. I'm like, Matt, why don't you come and be on set for a while, mm-hmm. while I'm shooting this other photogrammetry from the top of a crane of this boat that we are doing.
Right.
And divide and conquer.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it was effervescent. Like it had that. Fermenting ideas, the continuous throwing ideas in and see if they grew to become something that people could be attached to.
Right.
And it was just a lot of fun. In retrospect, it was really hard to be there at night. It was a lot of night shoots. We were on Lake Pyro at night.
Right.
Just
which
brutal.
Which lake was it?
Lake Pyro.
Which is where?
Castaic?
Oh, right.
Castaic Lake?
Yep.
You go, it's not a Castaic Lake, you go
Yeah. I know exactly what, yeah.
This is up in Santa Clarita, kind of in the, high desert,
I know
beyond
exactly
LA, north, yep.
It's, like on the opposite side of, I don't remember the freeway, but, you get there and it was fantastic, just the scenery, but you are out there, you do not have any cell phone reception,
mm-hmm.
so there is no way I can call, hey Matt, this is happening, what are we going to do?
Right.
There was nobody that can come and help you there.
Wow.
But it was gorgeous.
Nice.
It was gorgeous, it was arduous, it was, people really stay together. McG associates himself with some of the best people in the business. I mean, Tim Trella was there, he's the stunt coordinator. He's now doing The Matrix. Mm-hmm. he basically was one of the guys in The Matrix Reloaded that was in the car chase, in the highway car chase.
Oh, yeah, right.
But these guys are really, really, really experienced in doing this type of work.
And he keeps his team close to him. Wonderland, sound and video, Mary Viola, his producer, Stephen Bello, his producer, EP, that this partnership they have. A lot of these keys he's worked with for many, many years, both on the Below the Line side and on his production team. So that collaboration and kind of that second speak of where he's going to go,
mm-hmm.
what he wants to do with these films, it's not like you're starting from scratch every time he makes a movie. There's very much a, you can tell an energy and a synergy that works well for that team. And I think what's kind of fun about it is we all know, I think, this many years later, that whatever he brings is going to be visually fresh in a way that everybody's like not expecting. And I remember being, you know, probably just out of film school, and when I saw one of the first McGee music videos and films, and there's a certain group of directors from that era where everybody was just kind of blown away by what they were bringing to the table. You know, you thought about watching the first time, you know, the Charlie's Angels original trailer that he did in the film. And it's just like a new style, new way of using speed ramping, new way of using the camera. You know, to me, like more efficient and more fun, more energetic than a Michael Bay. A lot more tongue-in-cheek with the humor, a lot funnier, the kind of work that he does. And it just was a different style. McGee's movies, you can tell it's a McGee movie because there's a visual flair that very few people have. And so
rules do not apply.
He breaks the rules, absolutely.
With Babysitter, why some people just love it, and some people hate it, because, you know, it breaks expectations. It does things that are non-conventional. There is a risk with that. And the Babysitter really took a lot of risks. You know, it's paying off for some people, and for some others it's not. But definitely from our point of view, it really paid off, because it's been just a great experience for everybody involved. I mean, you know, you've been an artist, Chris. When you get to version 45, it's fun, but maybe, you know, not as much as version 12, you know, but that was the kind of movie that we went into. It was a movie where, yes, there is a general direction of where to go, but there is a lot of room for artistry to come through, you know, and a lot of things, because we were shooting so quickly, they were not buttoned up or ironed up from the visual effects point of view.
Right.
And you know, there is always a joke, you know, when you're on set, and the visual effects is going to take care of that.
Right.
And, you know, the question is always like, what is that we are taking care of?
Yeah.
Everything, you know. Right. Like, I don't know if you had a chance to see all the breakdowns that we did for the show.
I haven't.
But we exchanged all the Lake Pyrrho became Lake Powell. Mm-hmm. You know, we started first in TerraGen, and then we switched to matte painting. We did the layout in TerraGen, switched to matte painting just to make it even more real. It was pretty seamless in the show. You know, when they first all land into Lake Powell, that's basically us exchanging every shot when they're at the dock with the
lake bed, dock, mountain, skyscape, sort of everything was replaced. The foreground. Yeah.
Obviously, we did participate in a lot of the kills. They really shot it old school. That was fantastic, because there was a lot of blood and a lot of stuff that was
special effects, blood, makeup.
When you have that base, you can enhance, and all of a sudden you blur the line, and you do not know where visual effects touched and what is real, because it's just all one big mesh. And it's just,
well, that's when it gets a lot of fun, is when you mix the two, and then when you don't know which part is which, then it gets even more fun, right?
Oh, did you see when we pulled the head apart?
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Oh, man, that was so much fun.
I was going to ask you guys which one was your favorite death, and I was like, I think that one's my favorite.
Oh, man, they're all so good. You know, they're all so good in so many different ways. It's just like, it was a labor of love. I mean, I think it was my wife's favorite as well. We were spending the night, and she's like, well, let me see what you got. And so we pull her head. She comes down, the blood squirts, and all of a sudden you have a Willy Coyote type of thing happening, and it's just like so satisfying. That you know, and the beauty of it is that it didn't have to be like Avengers.
Right.
It didn't have all to be super photoreal. We had so much license.
Right.
Of doing things that it became like, okay, as long as it's effective to communicate what it needs to communicate at the moment, then the visual effects is successful.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. B-Ray
for me, I think probably John's death was my favorite. And
oh, yeah.
I just thought it was such a perfect hybrid the way they shot the special effects, practically the antler chandelier impalement, and just watching the aftermath of that as it sticks up and his eyeballs hanging off the, not, you know, spoiler alert on everything here, obviously, but you know, the eyeball hanging off
it before. Yeah,
that's right. it just reminded me of old Indiana Jones ILM style special effects and miniature and time lapse work, Pee Wee's Big Adventure, Large Marge, just sort of that fun, just taking the goriest of claymation and effects blood. And then taking what we can do to just blow that out of the water after that. And, and just, you know, the perfect hybrid of the two, not too digital, not too practical, where it's too campy, cheesy, even though there's moments where it's tongue-in-cheek supposed to be that in the movie, too.
Right.
I think that death was sort of a nice, sort of perfect balance of using the two artistries and being able to bring something really cool and gory out of it in a death that I've never seen before. See a lot of deaths. That one, not so much. So, yeah.
You know, I got to say, the biggest game changer for doing movies like this, it's really photogrammetry. You know, the fact that I can go in while they're shooting between setups and shoot somebody in the position where they are and get enough pictures to then recreate it and put the exact same position. It was crazy. And, you know, I had a deal with the first AD. I'm like, can I get in? It's like, get in and get out.
Right.
And I was in up until they were shooting with the actor on the floor. And, you know, it's not reference anymore.
Right.
It's not like the four-picture reference that you get. You start shooting, you don't stop. You get an absolutely perfect replica of what you have to match to. And all of a sudden, you can put blood on things. You can put real fluids. You can do anything.
Right.
You know, in the lake scene where we basically we put the water where Samara, the actress, is coming out of the water.
Yep.
That's basically I took a couple of thousand pictures of the area and then we did a very quick simulation in Houdini and then we brought it in Nuke and lit it with V-Ray for Nuke. Every single shot there was V-Ray for Nuke.
Wow.
You know, and all of a sudden I get real-time reflection. You want to change the sky? Great. Change the sky in Nuke. I do not have to wait 5 days for a new version of the water.
Right.
Everything matched. I had the coastline that was perfect. And, you know, like the new technology, you know, being able to use them to make our life easier, they're a game changer.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You combine photogrammetry, you combine Nuke, you combine V-Ray for Nuke. All of a sudden, you're freeing yourself to do a lot of different things that we were dreaming about like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Just couldn't do it.
Well, and especially what you guys were talking about, I mean, the shooting schedule being so tight, right? You don't have the freedom. It's like, okay, I need 7 minutes to do an HDR. They don't give me 7 minutes. You don't have 7 minutes.
This doesn't happen anymore. Right now, you know what you do? Yeah. I have it here. You get a Theta. You get in there. If you have enough time, you get your 8mm, or otherwise, you get in there, you get in down there, and you shoot 4 pictures with this.
Right.
There is no time. For shootings like this, it's like you gotta get something. You better get something.
Right. And you just gotta be, friendly with the AD. That's the thing. If you're friendly with the AD, you get him donuts every day or something, then you'll.
Oh man, the AD on this was fantastic.
Nice.
He's like Quentin Tarantino's AD.
Oh nice.
And he's just such an experienced, laid back kind of guy.
Nice.
He facilitated the process for me so very much. It was incredible. You know, it was all on location, and so you got to be friendly with everybody. And
right.
I made it a point that every single scene needed to be scanned.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is no real budget for LiDAR, so it's you. It's just one person.
Right.
And every single scene was scanned. At a certain point, I actually...
But you did it all just through photogrammetry. You just took a crap load of pictures and you had everything you needed, right?
I figured it out. I figured out how to do it. I have a system now.
Right.
Yeah, but the craziest one day I've done, I was on a freaking boat. Mm-hmm. I got marine on Lake Pyro because we were doing this big explosion with jet ski exploding everything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, you know, they're saying that they're going to shoot it practical, but we're running out of time. They're not going to shoot it practical. And if they do, I still have to implement it in there. And so I'm like, you know what, just let me go in there, give me a boat, and right. I'll go there, I'll shoot a crap load of pictures. So I had the guys on the boat, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay guys, start slowing down. And as they slow down, I go there.
Click, click, click.
And
yeah.
People are looking at me. What are you doing? Yeah. Oh, I'm just taking a lot of pictures.
Right.
Don't you have enough? And, you know, just to explain to people, it's like, no, you really need a few hundred pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get overboard. And you get a couple of thousand and you're covered.
Right.
You don't really have time to figure it out.
You just need enough parallax between things, and then you're generally good.
It's just like the same technology as 3D tracking.
Yep.
He just makes a whole bunch of points, and then it's sometimes it's poison mesh or whatever mesh you end up using.
Right.
But, you know, reality capture was king on this. I was using reality capture on set.
Okay.
Because I wanted to verify.
Your data. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in there, I'm on set. What do? You don't verify.
Right.
I have the ability to do it. Why not do it?
Well, you know, the new iPad Pro is going to have a LiDAR in it.
So the LiDAR in it is no joke.
Yeah, I know. It's so you're going to be like, that's going to change a lot. That's going to make it even easier. Yeah, it just goes...
Absolutely, especially because you get the absolute position.
Yeah.
I do not know how it's going to do for textures because, you know, when I get...
Well, you'll do that with the camera.
Yeah, but... You know, when I get 1,000 picture with a 24 megapixel camera,
right? Yeah,
my textures are pretty high resolution.
Sure.
So it is to be seen. I'm not a big fan of LiDARs altogether because I find that they give you less resolution than a good, well-made photogrammetry.
Right.
And they are limited in space.
Right. So they can't go so far. Right. Yeah.
I did canyons with photogrammetry.
Right.
So
of
I did
course.
Three canyons,
yeah.
Which are, you know, gigantic, are 100 feet across,
right.
So on both sides. So I would love for the LiDAR to be as good as photogrammetry.
Right.
That would be really fantastic. But,
yeah.
No, you're there, you verify your data, you run your photogrammetry as you're going. The actual chandelier was also photogrammetry. That gets pretty complicated. You know, you got to be friendly on set with everybody.
Yeah.
Because they got to take down the chandelier for you. You
yes.
gotta put it in a place where you can light it.
Yes.
And you know, the Scott, the DP, was amazing. He actually made the equivalent of a sound booth.
Mm.
He basically made the ring of fire for me
mm-hmm.
at night, in the middle of the night. It was running out of light, and he still made that for me.
Wow.
So that I could take photogrammetry of the actual actors.
Wow.
So that we could do that in post. Look, the entire environment, everybody was so eager to help.
Right.
Which is fantastic.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Well, I'm going to, if that's all right with you guys, I'm going to jump around a little bit because I do that. And I think I want people to know a little bit about Crafty Apes. So what can you guys tell me about your company? Where are you based? How did it start? Where did all this come from? So give us a little bit of a history about that. Who wants to start?
Can start. Crafty Apes was founded by two brothers and one of their good friends, Chris Ledoux and Tim Ledoux,
uh-huh.
Two VFX supervisors. and then Jason Sanford was their partner, who is an EP and a visual effects producer.
Yeah.
And back in 2014, they were all working at different facilities and on different shows, both freelance and facility side, and decided, hey, we should put together a shop and really focus on our sweet spot, which is 2D and 2.5D high level work. They were working at places like Pixamondo and Scanline
yep.
and Riot at the time. And as they started to get together, they realized, there's a high margin for not just doing, low level work, but actually high to mid level 2 and 2.5D work in volume,
mm-hmm.
just using really great people and keeping the culture good. And in El Segundo, they started a little shop,
right.
Brought in their other brother, Mark Ledoux, and then brought in the fourth brother, David Ledoux, who, so there's basically four Ledoux brothers that kind of help run
right.
the show, plus a Sanford.
Okay.
The gents started in El Segundo, Culver City actually originally, and then moved over to El Segundo
uh-huh.
with our first facility. Currently, that remains our first and original office. We're up to about 40 CG artists, compers, producers in that team, almost 45 now.
Right.
And then we expanded. Chris Ledoux took his brother Mark, went out to Georgia
right.
back in 2016, kind of got ahead of the tax credit and the production boom in Atlanta proper,
mm-hmm.
and started a facility out here. We kind of became the one game in town, drawing talent from Florida State and you know, Dave's school for some of the local students, mm-hmm. as well as others from New York, and even brought some from California with him out to kind of start the core team. And then ultimately, you know, 3.5 years later, in Atlanta, we're about 70 in this main office here now. Aldo works here in this office. I moved out here. I'm from LA. I moved out to Atlanta. Really, for me, it was a quality of life decision after many, many years in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Being able to work on, you know, the kind of movies we wanted to work on, but to have the life we wanted with our families out here and to have it sustainable. So, so this office became our biggest office this last year. Okay. We've got scanning services here. We've got on-set supervision. We have a theater. We do a lot of on-set consultation and data wrangling.
Right.
This last year, we did all the data and set work for Amazing Stories for Amblin.
Uh-huh.
Locally, we do a lot of the Marvel work out here, a lot of Sony work, Fox work. We're on a Universal feature right now, a lot of Lionsgate TV. Pretty much all the majors that are working in Georgia. It's really been cool because we, you know, Chris thought, you know, and kind of got ahead of this with the staffing, and we don't do a lot of freelancers. We staff.
Okay.
So there's a real permanency and a culture that kind of grows out of people knowing they have a home base, and it's just a lot of training. It's a lot of, you know, people moving forward with their skill sets and being able to be given opportunities to, you know, to thrive and to move into new senior positions. So I think instead of it feeling like a sweatshop where we're just like kind of like recycling talent through, it really just becomes more of a familial.
We're taking talents from anywhere. Yeah. There is no blue blood talented person. It's like we look for talent anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Ledoux are famous for picking up people from the street and just train them.
Right.
And they end up being some of the best artists we have because they want it.
Yeah.
It's because it's family owned, it's not driven by the dollar. You know, we're not a big sort of, you know, everything's about P&L and EBITDA only here. Like we're really focused on the quality of the work and people first as far as the culture. So one of the things that drew me in, I was working for a competitor a couple years ago, mm-hmm. about 3 years ago. And Chris said, you know, one thing I can tell you is our retention rate's about 96%. That's, I don't know any other visual effects company that can claim that, having more than 100, 150 people at the minimum.
Right.
And I really, you know, I really found that to be true. People don't really leave once they come to Crafty, unless there's a real need, you know, for personal reasons or something, they stick around. So that leads to a consistent pipeline. It leads to, you know, consistency in work and an understanding of the team structure and how the leadership and those relationships develop artistically. Aldo's had, you know, in the last 4 or 5 shows, a lot of those same leads and artists that have done the same great work for him. And
yep.
So anyway,
yeah, when you do that, when you do have that consistency and you keep working with the same people, it's just a lot more efficient in the end.
Yeah. A lot more efficient, totally.
Yeah. And absolutely. And Chris, you have been a digital domain in the golden era, probably, and you know what it means to have the greatest people on earth to work with.
Yeah. You know? Absolutely.
2.5 years ago, we opened New York.
Okay.
We sent up one of our comp supervisors to open that facility, and we're up to about 35 team members up there. I'd say staff-wise, I think we're about 28 out of the 35, and then we have a few longer contract hires that are we just keep renewing them to get through, you know, the COVID of it all right now. It's hard to staff in New York. You want to keep the best talent as you have them, and it's a whole different system with challenges and holds and other people trying to go after your best people. But that facility is mostly feature and episodic. We're just getting into the commercial market up there right now as well.
Interesting, yeah.
You know, it's interesting days with COVID and not having for commercial work clients inside on flames and lattes and that whole kind of white glove system, but we're able to do remote work. All of our facilities right now are remote workflow. Everybody's on a Red Sophos, you know, firewall system via, and then Teradici basically dialing into their boxes and using our servers, you know, to render at their actual locations, even though they're all working from home. And what's been great is the latency's low, the efficiency's high. We haven't seen a big decrease in terms of productivity. People are really grateful to be able to be safe. And our studio partners have been awesome about saying, hey, as long as you're willing to work from home, we're fine with it, even up to the marvels of it all.
I have a flame in my room. My wife's a flame artist, so.
Oh, nice. Awesome. Okay.
We have a flame in our bedroom, so we've been, so to speak.
No, just kidding.
No, it's been crazy. I mean, it's like, you know, so many computers going on in our house, and then we have two kids that are in, you know, Zoom school, so It's in like, you know, well, we deal with it. Yeah.
Matt's got three. Matt's got three. I got four.
Right.
Man, we're repopulating Earth between the three.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay. Yeah. So it's been tough. But honestly speaking, the thing that's interesting to me is the fact that the thing that they always told us will never happen, you know, working remotely, logging in or doing this, suddenly when they had no choice, it was very possible to do that.
Absolutely.
Oh, I don't know if you're aware, but Pinterest, they just got out of a lease of a building because they're like, oh, we don't need a building anymore. Right. We can do it without.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got to tell you, I worked for a competitor as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much driven by P&L.
Mm-hmm.
And working for Crafty has been so different and so refreshing.
Nice.
And, you know, really the apex of that was really Babysitter, because it really consolidated everything where we could really be free to actually do the work and be artists. You know, I remember one of the first calls that I had with Max King. I'm like, you know, you're asking us to be artists. Nobody has asked us to be artists. Right. In many years,
that's
you
nice.
Know, we, but you know, the beautiful thing about Crafty is that first of all, during this pandemic,
mm-hmm.
we kept 90% of the people. I've seen from the competitor I was working with, they let everybody furlough. You know, they went.
I'm going to ask you about that, and what? So you're, that's a really good point. The work that you guys focus on is tends to seem to be a very comp driven solutions to a lot of the things you're doing, right? Would you say that's a truth to that, or?
Well, no,
I think that's how we started, and I think we've merged into a more 2.5D and 3D centric kind of, you know,
but
hybrid
generalist.
Generally, we try to solve things in 2D. Definitely. Yeah.
Well, and that's where people like me come into play. I have a history as a visual effects artist.
Uh-huh.
I have a visual history as a compositor. I've been a CG supervisor.
Uh-huh.
And to me, it's all one.
Mm-hmm.
And you can combine all of those if you have the right skills.
Okay.
So, it can be comp. Yeah, but I'm still going to use V-Ray for Nuke.
Right.
You know, do you still call that comp?
No, I don't call that comp. But I mean, but what it is that you guys are doing certain solutions that are necessary right now, right? They're not the big, huge, monolithic, immovable pipeline that you have in a lot of other facilities. And so I think that you guys are more diverse in terms of all the different kinds of projects that you guys can do. You can do from the small little projects all the way up to the, you know,
the
Marvel projects,
the same.
Right?
The efficiency is the same. The quality, it just gets better and better because you get the same people. Yes, we have an incredible 2D team and we have an incredible 3D team.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, we are starting to shine with projects like, you know, Babysitter, where we are taking it all.
Right.
You know, no matter how small or how big, we are going for it, and we can do it. There is no problem at all, and we can do it on the budget where everybody's happy.
Right.
And that's really the key of it. How do you figure out a novel solution to an old problem?
Mm.
And for us, really, was photogrammetry was at the base of it.
Right.
Yeah, Aldo's bringing a good point. We're not looking to play in the sandbox of Weta with Game of Thrones Dragon. You know, that's not our wheelhouse. It's not the one that probably keeps our doors open in the long haul in terms of profitability and being able to be scalable.
Mm-hmm.
We're also not, you know, looking for the lowest tier, you know, cleanup work. There's definitely sort of that sub-A tier guys in garages that kind of all hub into one, you know, place that kind of owns a company. There's a place in New York that kind of does that where they just farm it all out to random dudes. And like the quality control and what you see on the screen ends up looking like what you expect you're going to see on the screen. So I think for us, you know, we're not that sub-A tier. We're not that, you know, Weta tier. But in the middle of that, there's kind of these different, you know, I'd say there's an accordion stretch for us where we'll build our 3D team out, our effects team out. You know, a little heavier as needed so that we can take the entirety of a show as opposed to just the 90% of a show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's very interesting that what how you guys are approaching this. And I think also, obviously there are shows now that are happening. There's a lot of great content that's happening that's going to streaming networks that is very valuable right now. So you guys are in a position that you're able to address that market really in a great way. You know, and you know, the Babysitter is a perfect example. Like that's a great show that right now fits perfectly in what people want to see. They can see it right away on Netflix, and it's going to probably do really, really well. Mm-hmm. You know, with a great director and a lot of fun and a lot of freedom, and then you guys are, you know, can hit those types of projects, which are great. And I think that there's people should just sort of start to look at some of that idea and say, hey, those are great projects. Those are fun to work on.
And Chris, I think one thing to point out, which is kind of a backward way of growing as a smaller 2D company. A lot of them start as a 2D company working in lower budget episodic. Okay. Growing into digital and streaming and cable, and then growing into feature sort of as a stretch.
Right.
Our side was the opposite.
Yeah, I know.
Feature.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, when you're working 2D heavy feature work, you know, and you're able to do things with solutions that aren't 3D and CG centric and as expensive and as comely, you're able to, you know, basically bring then to the cable and the TV market a level of quality that already has a price point that works really well.
Yes.
So, you know, we're going to, you know, HBO and working on things like Insincere, Insecure. Insecure, we just finished. Perry Mason.
Yeah.
We just took
on a bunch great. Of the... Yeah.
Oh, we love it. Yeah, no, it was great working with Justin Ball. Mm-hmm. The end of that show came in and just took over a big chunk after the vendor wasn't able to complete some of the stuff that they had assigned. We became one of the mains at the end. And again, because it was mostly 2D solutions, it wasn't like we had a hand wrestle over prices. They were already getting feature quality, but for cable kind of needs and on an episodic time frame. So I think that's helped us a lot break into the episodic market, which is actually the newer piece for us this last couple of years we've been getting into, whereas feature has always sort of been like we're getting calls from all the majors in terms of feature work. We want it to break into TV. It's really just, okay, well now we're just making sure enough production resources are staffed to turn stuff around quick enough with the shot count needed. But the quality and sort of the pricing is sort of already there because we're already doing it for feature in a way that works really well in a 2D pipeline.
Yes. But let's not kid ourselves. Go ahead, Aldo.
Yeah,
sorry.
And it is feature that kept us alive during the pandemic because feature has a much longer timeline.
Right.
And so this diversity, and, you know, we owe it mostly to Matt, actually, is one of the key player in actually making that happen. The diversification and the communication with all the majors,
right?
And you know, we.
I'll send you the McAllen and the FedEx later tonight. Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
I know. I get that.
but listen. I mean, streaming is not lower tier in my mind anymore because clearly we've seen quality coming out of streaming networks that are rivals and not surpasses a lot of feature work, and the streaming wars are out there right now. They're real. There's, you know, and since the pandemic, what, three new big major streaming networks have launched? Right. So those three.
It's really interesting watching this because we're hearing these rumors of Amazon maybe starting theatrical experience venues, right?
Yeah.
And kind of that, to Aldo's point, not just for theatrical releases, but even just for Netflix features and for Amazon features.
Right.
What's been nice about those projects is the quality level, the tiering. It is like working on a theatrical feature, but the timelines expand and there isn't sort of this hard, like day and date, kind of, you know, back-ended, everything's crushing, like a Marvel film that has to be out on this day and they're going to cut right to the last minute and VFX is going to have to spread it so wide. Netflix will go, look, movie's not ready, let's add some weeks to editorial. This can debut online 3 weeks later or 2 months later or 6 months later.
Right.
And so during the pandemic,
it's not like they reserved the seats already, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And as streaming sort of takes over, that flexibility of, you know, being able to have everything sort of ready for a binge watch if it's an episodic series,
right,
or for when it's really promoted well and the filmmakers are ready to go. You know, Netflix is great about giving their directors freedom to finish their films correctly. They don't rush them in post. They don't rush VFX. In fact, their executives are very involved with, you know, being able to want a QC and have sort of a creative sign off and a thumbs up. They're not micromanaging, but they do make sure that their stuff looks friggin' amazing before it goes on air. So
right.
We had a lot of freedom on Babysitter, and everybody was wondering when we were gonna get the Netflix, you know, QC, and they really gave McG carte blanche.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. It's just like, you know, we had very few notes. I know that they gave some story notes to them in editorial, but we were not part of it. We were just basically reacting to whatever different shots we were getting at that point.
But instead of a studio saying, hey, we don't want you to do that much, is that really necessary? Netflix is a studio who will come alongside the filmmaker and say, we love everything you're doing. what if you did more, and what if we threw more money at it to even make it bigger? And that's, it's just such a rarity, you know, where everyone's always crunching budgets. And I think it has to do with, you know, not being dependent on that theatrical release model. And especially with the pandemic, it's all being rethought now.
Right.
You know, how much money is there, and where do we want to spend this, and where is marketing going? Where's advertising going? And, you know, I think the filmmakers trusting a studio like a Netflix, like an Amazon, to give them that carte blanche is going to only help us be able to put our best stuff on the screen and be able to have our margins be in a good place at the same time.
Well, I can speak as an artist, but I can also speak as a consumer of content, and I consume a lot of it, is that one of the things that's been really refreshing about the situation, this pandemic situation, is that the another thing that the audience has defied what has been thought of as the norm is original content is not profitable, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact is, people are consuming way more original content than they ever were,
100%.
which means now that their people love new things, and it's not just they want to see the same thing over and over again. They love new things, and that's wonderful. And it also means that as an artist now, I can say that we can create more and new, cool, fun ideas and experiment with fun, cool stuff.
Totally.
So I think that's great, right?
You know, we are looking forward for V-Ray and the real-time V-Ray part of it. Because, you know, getting people to use Unreal has been a bit tricky. Right. But that's the next thing, right? We are all now working on virtual production, getting that ready. And everybody's asking, when is V-Ray gonna come up with the real time, so we can do real time visual effects for iteration? You know, iterating is so important in our business. The more we iterate, the better the product.
The faster
is
to iterate, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to be able to make decisions when your mouse is down, not when you have to wait for the mouse to come up to do it.
Thanks. That's right. Just to say, hey, look, I have this idea.
Right.
I'm like, oh, that's fantastic. Let's see if the client loves it.
Right.
And in between 3 hours, because now everybody's paranoid and is in front of a computer, you get an answer from the client that is like, yeah or nay.
Right.
You know, and then you can move forward.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. No, that's true. It's true. I'm actually curious about, you know, like, what are you guys obviously experimenting or looking or probably even doing virtual production work yourself? What is your thoughts on that process, and how do you think it's going to play out for you guys?
Well, it's going to be a great way to get people accustomed to what visual effects are and what they are not.
Okay.
It's going to be us finally being in the same room as everybody else and getting our ideas out and then iterating into the production design.
Huh.
There's a lot to be discovered,
mm-hmm.
you know, like when are certain things happening, you know, where, you know, there is a practical point that is like budget-wise. Where is that budget coming from? Is that the post budget, or is it the shooting budget?
Right.
Is there gonna be unions? You know, I'm talking about the menial things that people are thinking about. All of a sudden, you are in a place where everybody's in a union. You're not in a union, and you're moving digital lights around.
Right.
Is that allowed?
Right.
You know. So
that's an interesting question. Yeah. I mean, like, do you get charged like an electrician's union or a DP and all that stuff?
Right? Still being figured out, right?
Well,
now,
everybody's figuring it out. Look, the technology ain't easy, and lighting ain't easy. So it's just a matter of time before you'll have specialized gaffers that come from an Unreal real-time game school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are tools that you can use. Yes, we are heavily into virtual production.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we are expanding our abilities to do that. And yes, we shouldn't talk about it.
Okay, I'm sure.
Well, I can tell you we have about 6 weeks out from now. We're going to be doing a big sort of launch and a demo for what Crafty's been working on. It is a little NDA under the radar at the moment. Okay. For the last couple of months,
but
Aldo's
can you
really
tell
involved.
Us what to look out for, and then we can go check that out and when, you know, we, when we and are, where yeah, you'll be announcing it.
We'll have an announcement about the podcast. We're doing sort of a podcast, a live demo, a press release, kind of all around this, and it has to do with a couple of key projects that we're in discussions with at the studio level. One bigger budget feature, one episodic show.
Okay.
That are both very exciting and higher profile with some producers that are of name. I think what's really exciting to us is not just trying to figure out how to be the new Mandalorian. We're not going and trying to compete with X-Lab. We do think there's some really cool things to train filmmakers on about how to use this in a way that, you know, not just for the new normal of post-COVID world, but even just how to save money on, you know, things like actors and extras not having to be there en masse. Things like, you know, stadium shots of thousands of people not having to be all digital replicas, having to, looking at, you know, a scene as easy as two people sitting in, exterior Madison Square Garden with hundreds of people walking around in the background and making that a virtual production exercise instead of trying to shut down, you know, Fifth Avenue. I mean, that sort of kind of real life, creating libraries of sprites, libraries of actual extras and being able to use them and real world environments. I think for us, the fun of it is getting away from, you know, 30 years ago, what Seinfeld was doing with bad rear screen projection and figuring out how there's a way with parallax and with tracking and with actual, you know, production values and cinematography in mind, using visual effects to help drive what the virtual production pipeline could be to help them save a lot of time and money on set, as opposed to having it sort of driven out of like this sort of sub arena, which it always is. Like you go to set and a lot of times the rear screen projection companies that come on, it's like you got ADs going, hey, okay, can I get the VFX group over here to line this all up? And we're going, hey, this, it's not really our, you know, we're not running this. This isn't, you know, yeah. we're here to fix what doesn't go right with this. And a lot of times it doesn't.
Right. Yeah.
But having that be under the purview of visual effects, you can actually save a lot of money and not have to go to green screen as much.
Mm-hmm.
To me, there's a lot of interest, I think, for our company in ways to, for the 80 to 90% of the invisible sort of VFX work we do, mm-hmm. and more realism, kind of figure out what that pipeline looks like and how we can offer that as a service. Now, there's obviously going to be some great offerings that we're going to show to and talk about that are more fantastical, planetary stuff, world building. But a lot of that, you know, it's just kind of coming over that misnomer that there's this huge budgetary savings by actually doing it, because the amount of coding and prep and asset creation in a photoreal way prior to getting it into the UI and getting all the tracking figured out. And I mean,
you need a lot of people on set.
A lot of people. Those are for bigger.
No matter how small your shoot, you need a ton of LED screens. You need at least 4 or 5 extra people.
Right.
Technicians.
Right.
You know, just moving things around.
Yeah. And the screen costs and the build out. And if you look at a movie like The Martian, there's absolutely a case that could be made for that being a great sort of, you know, that kind of world being something that you could do in one location or just a few locations over the course of 4 or 5 weeks on a stage and save, you know, tens of millions of dollars of 3D work and lighting and rendering. But, you know, for something where you might have a scene, where you just need exteriors, it's going to be hard to justify setting up a virtual production scenario just for that versus just green screen comp and 20 shots and being done with it. So I think that's the thing we're all learning. It's what's the crew cost, what's the extras cost, what's physical production versus post, and where are those savings?
Right.
And then honestly, where's the quality going to be versus the hassle to set it all up and just to try it?
Right.
And not to stomp on innovation, but I think, you know, it's like, let's not call it the magic ticket yet. It's there's certain things it'll be amazing for, and like we want to get out there and learn as we go.
Okay.
So.
You know, Matt, while I'm very, very involved in this process, there are some novel ways to actually look at shots that are fantastic in production wise.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I see a shot from a famous movie, I'm like, I could do this in virtual production.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the eye is going now. Can I actually get myself in a forest in 10 minutes?
Right.
Yeah. And 10 minutes later, can I be on a sandy beach? Yeah.
Right.
So in the same day, you can actually have a wonderfully lit sunset for like 12 hours.
Right.
Okay. So that's the difference. When you're looking at things that you are like, oh, I can shoot this just for 20 minutes. And then you extend that amount of time to actually, instead of having to go to the same location like 40 times
right.
to shoot the same thing. So let's say that you're on top of a skyscraper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you need that sunlight coming right from there.
Yep.
You can be there all day. Okay. Yeah. And you do not have to wait for that moment in time. So there are places and moments where you are like, okay, I need to shoot an entire scene. I got 5 pages of script that I have to go to. I have to go to the same place like 5 days in a row. You cut that time.
Right.
All of a sudden. So that becomes the convenience. The change the location for certain expensive places that you do not necessarily want to go to.
Right.
You know, yeah, like, I mean, we've been bidding and awarded in the last few weeks, I mean, literally 3 projects that are all episodic that all take place in various sports arenas or stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
And the new normal of extra pods and how many people you can actually have together.
Right.
You know, you look at this, and if this was ready, you know, now for some of these shows, which we're working on, some developments with that, but
right.
That'd be a great example of having, you know, a captured, you know, group of live action extras and sprites and libraries that you can kind of create and set up, and then based on different lens changes and parallax and camera movements, being able to use that instead of having to have, you know, 10 days of, you know, 50 extras times 5 pods and then having to tile and all the work that comes with that, taking away from your physical production timeline, especially on an episodic schedule. We don't have time for that right now.
Right.
Because everything is harder. Everything is slower with testing. Everything is less people available. It's to Aldo's point, those are the exciting developments of this for us. It's where can we help solve some of those problems that have now become different and real compared to, you know, maybe 6 months ago when it was just get 100 people in and we'll go.
Yeah. Right. So ultimately, I mean, the thing that people are talking about is like, well, virtual production is very expensive. Well, but it saves you a ton of money, so it's not really expensive.
Depending on what it's used for.
Yeah.
You know, you end up, if you want to be on a skyscraper, how many times we saw location of skyscrapers?
Right.
So you don't need to be there. You just make a set.
Right.
You don't even put a blue screen. You put a few LEDs and you put something behind, and all of a sudden you're done.
Right.
You know, which could be true for matte paintings as well, right? I have a setup of virtual production in my home at this point, and I've been running off demos with my kids, and not just with the screen and the LEDs, but real time keying, where I'm tracking stuff, and all of a sudden I have my kids playing in my basement. I have a full green screen room, and it's just so exciting.
Yeah.
You know, to be part of this, it makes you look at the future and like, okay, this is not a stale type of thing anymore. It gets a little bit more crunchy. You have to perform.
Right.
All of a sudden you're on set and like, okay, let's change something. You'll have to do that, or you'll have to have people capable of doing that.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. Well, listen, we're actually just about 4 o'clock LA time. I know you guys are in Georgia, but I wanted to just make sure to now find out. I mean, obviously you guys have some very exciting things going on. There's obviously a lot of things that we should be following what you guys are doing. Sounds like there's going to be some exciting announcements. There, besides your website, was there any places that people can find out more about you and where when you're going to be able to announce some of these cool projects that you guys are on?
Yeah, we'll be on social doing some blasts about the virtual and a sort of a grand opening or launch of that to kind of walk through our developments, as I mentioned, sooner than later.
Right.
One thing to mention is we did open up, just finishing up the question about our facilities and who we are today
mm-hmm.
from earlier. So we talked about Atlanta, LA, and New York. We also have now a Baton Rouge facility that's at Celtic Studios.
Okay.
Fully, you know, tax creditable of about 15 artists and producers, and they're already working on a couple of feature projects there.
Yep.
And they're also helping drive the virtual production. We also have an Albuquerque studio we just opened up, which is opened right before COVID. It's a little smaller, but starting to blossom. And 30% tax credit eligibility there in New Mexico to do work. I have a series for CW that's going to be running through there starting in a few weeks. And then we just acquired in March, a Vancouver facility, and that's priorly known as or formerly known as CVD, Charlie Victor Daniel Visual Effects.
Okay.
Now they're Craft Apes Vancouver. They're a real well-known company, worked on Stranger Things alongside us as another vendor.
Right.
And we acquired them, and Chris Van Dyke and his team is now Craft Apes Vancouver. And we have about 35 up in that office. So we have a Canadian presence.
That's
as
a
well,
lot of offices.
So. We're almost 200 now across the six.
Wow.
So it's great.
The base is talent. Like every single person, the new Albuquerque people and the new Baton Rouge. I was actually thinking of moving to Baton Rouge. I mean, the people there are so talented. It just in good Crafty Apes tradition, just no matter what, just hire the most talented people out there.
That's great.
That's kind of just our ethos, is get ahead of it, plant our roots, and try to be there for when the clients want to film in an area that's a little bit more available and tax credit eligible. We've been pretty good, I think, about getting ahead of it for the most part. So we're excited about that.
Cool. That sounds great, guys. Well, awesome. I really appreciate you guys coming on board. I was excited. You know, you guys reached out to me about this idea, and I said, that sounds like a lot of fun. And plus, it's an opportunity for me to watch a cool horror film. So always something that's a bonus for me. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was a lot of work, but it's paying off, man. It's been great.
It's one of the more comfortable podcasts I've ever done. Thanks for making it easy to riff. It's enjoyable.
Yeah, so. It's my pleasure. I've done quite a few of these now.
That's great.
Coming up on 6 years of podcasting. So
nice.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. You have a great day. Thanks, Chris.
You too.